You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The music of tomorrow is being written today. The music of tomorrow is almost ready to play.
Experience the musicals of tomorrow today. Get a glimpse inside the blueprint of an original musical being developed in real time. With New York Theatre Barn's podcast, The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The music of tomorrow.
I'm Joe Barros.
And I'm Jen Sandler.
And we're the hosts of The Musicals of Tomorrow. As the Artistic Director and Associate Artistic Director of New York Theatre Barn, we make space to speak in community with musical theatre writers and their creative teams.
Lifting up songs from original culture-shifting musicals in development and introducing them to a global audience has become a major part of New York Theatre Barn's evolving story.
Each original musical's intention, content, and journey are unique and extraordinary to the storytellers who create them. We believe that there is no formula for musical theatre except authenticity. We recently spoke with the writers of A Walk on the Moon, Paul Scott Goodman and Pamela Gray, and the writers of We Live in Cairo, Daniel and Patrick Lazur.
Our first musical is A Walk on the Moon, which has music and lyrics by Paul Scott Goodman and book and additional lyrics by the film's screenwriter, Pamela Gray. The show features music supervision by Greg Anthony Rassen and direction by Cheryl Collar.
A Walk on the Moon is a heart-stirring new musical that transports audiences to the summer of 1969. Man is about to take his first steps on the moon. Pearl Kantrowitz, a dutiful housewife, is spending another season with her husband and family in the Catskills, just miles from Woodstock. Sensing the change in the air and longing to take a giant leap of her own, Pearl begins a love affair with a free-spirited traveling salesman. But when this whirlwind romance pulls her away from the life she's always known, Pearl must decide if she's truly ready to leave her world behind.
Here's our conversation with the writers of A Walk on the Moon, Paul Scott Goodman, and Pamela Gray.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, Paul. Hi, how's it going? It's so good to have you here. I'm a huge fan of your work. I love your shows, Bright Lights, Big City, and Rooms. I would be remiss to say that I haven't sung in the shower, Coma Baby, and Bring the Future Faster. So those are things that happen in my life. I love your work.
I have not done that, but I'm very fortunate to have worked with you.
Well, that's almost as good.
So before we dive into a little conversation with you and Pamela and your team, this story takes place in 1969. And 1969 saw the Manson murders, the Stonewall riots, the Woodstock Festival, Man Landing on the Moon, The Who released the rock opera Tommy, which I love. Richard Nixon was the 37th president of the United States. The Black Panthers ignited the Black Power movement. Interracial marriage had only been recently legalized the year before, and there were large anti-Vietnam war protests. In fact, your song, Something New, references some of these historical events. Needless to say, change was in the air for an evolving America. In 1969, Americans were fighting against police brutality. They were fighting for racial and gender equality and searching for peace through music and peaceful protests. And it actually feels remnant of the broken country that we are currently living in.
I'm also going to bring on the great Pamela Gray now as well. So I know the two of you have a lot of history with this show. This was your beloved film before it was the musical it is now, Pamela. So how did all of this come to be that you started working together?
About a year after the movie came out, I was contacted by other producers who are not our producers now, and they had the idea to turn it into a musical. They had brought Paul in, and he had already written a song or two, and it wound up falling out with these producers. And Paul stayed in touch with me through the years and kept saying, what can we do? And I finally said, all right, let's do something. And he mentioned a friend of his was a theater director. And I didn't hear the name. I couldn't understand his Scottish accent. And it turned out to be Michael Greif. And so we went into Velmont, the three of us. Paul brought in the Hendels, Ruth and Steve. And we worked with Michael until Dear Evan Hansen. And then we got the wonderful Cheryl Keller. So it had two histories.
And Paul, what speaks to you about this movie? Why did you want to musicalize it?
It was about love and about music and about change, about turmoil. All the things that we're thinking about now, I think they were thinking about then. Also, it was a good chance to work with a Hollywood screenwriter, which I'd never done before.
How has your score elevated this story in particular? Because I think your scores are always so particular and nuanced.
Well, you know, Pam writes in a way that's very detailed and easy to write. And so, you know, she was giving me really good situations, you know, historical situations, actually. So I always thought if I could write some decent songs, I had a chance of passing the test of time.
I just was going to say, I think this movie has truly passed the test of time, because it's something when you bring it up, so many people think about it so fondly, and it's something they're so excited about still.
Yeah, so many people like it. What were you going to say?
I was going to talk about the two inspirations for the movie, which just translated into the musical. I spent all my summer in the Catskills at these bungalow colonies, and there were two inspirations. One was that so many people didn't know about the bungalow colony world, which was a working class Jewish world. It wasn't like the big hotels. And it was only women and children during the week, and men came up on the weekends. So I wanted to show that world. And I had a very distinct memory, which I think is the fulcrum of our show. I was in the swimming pool with the bubbies playing mahjong and the moms playing cards. And through the chain link fence, I saw the hippies walking to the Woodstock Festival. A lot of people don't know that the festival was not in Woodstock. It was in the midst of all these bungalow colonies. And I wanted to throw myself through that fence. I was literally on the wrong side of history. And that's what our main character goes through. She's got a teenage daughter living in the summer of 69, who is part of, in her mind, the revolution. And here's this working class Jewish housewife who is separated from that world completely. And gradually, through the influence of the summer itself, the walk on the moon, the daughter, and the blouse man, who's the hippie she has the affair with, she wants to get on the other side of the fence. And I think Paul really grabbed that and started from that place.
You, Paul, seem to have a really exciting collaboration, which began at New York Stage and Film's Powerhouse Theater at Vassar, which is a very exciting beginning for your show.
So I know after Vassar, you know, you had a development at New York Theater Workshop. Tell us about after that. You know, you had a production out west in San Francisco, and then you have a production that was scheduled to happen this spring at the George Street Playhouse in New Jersey, and it is scheduled to happen next year now, hopefully.
Hopefully.
2029, I think.
No. I was just going to say, for those people who are tuning in who don't know what San Francisco's ACT is, that's San Francisco's American Conservatory Theater, which is completely different from George Street Playhouse. And now joining us to tell us more about the development of the show and its evolution is creative team members, Tony-nominated director Cheryl Keller and music supervisor Greg Anthony Rasten.
Thank you guys for joining us.
So Cheryl, you, you're Tony nominated for last fall, and you develop rich new plays and new musicals. So a project like this wouldn't be any different. Tell us a bit about how you got involved in your journey with the show.
Firstly, I want to say that one of the greatest things, thank you for having us here. And one of the greatest things about our business is that Michael Greif kind of blessed me. You know, Michael had hit a crossroads with having Evan Hansen and another music, War Paint, happening, you know, two trains. And, you know, you can only have two trains running. My agent, I was shopping in Nordstrom with my daughter in Long Island, I swear. And
rest in peace, Nordstrom.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes. And my agent called me like 3 or 4 times in a row. And he said, do you know Ruth and Steve Handel? Do you know Ruth and Steve Handel? They're producing this musical that's perfect for you. And I said, yes, I know them. And I know a lot of people who know them. And so I had like 30 of my best friends call Ruth and Steve. And finally, Ruth called me and said, okay. And they introduced me and I did a Zoom with Pam and Paul. And then Paul came up to my apartment. I was living on the Upper West Side and came up with his guitar and we did another Zoom. And, you know, this musical, I think, Joe, you said, like, I like digging in. I like digging in deep. And this musical is so evocative. It's a feminist story. It's a story. I think, Pam, you described it so beautifully, as did you, Paul. You know, it involves young people making a revolution. We don't know what that feels like now, right? And it involves women who are feeling like they can do more. We don't know how that feels like either, right? Ava DuVernay did an interview with Angela Davis in the most recent Vanity Fair that Ta-Nehisi Coates guest edited. And she said that, you know, history not only repeats itself, but as activists, we just have to keep on being active. And the world will catch up with us one day. And so I feel like we are living in a time that is so relevant to what happened in 69 and how far we've come and how far we really haven't come and what Woodstock did and how music can change the world and what Black and Brown and BIPOC artists are bringing to our community now and everything that our musical, you know, it's about a Jewish woman in the bungalow colonies on the other side of the fence. And it's also about what's happening now. And those are my favorite, you know, the specificity of that, you know, specificity makes it universal. And so we just keep digging into those stories. So it's just very, and the music is the bomb. So it's just great. It's just great.
And Greg, I know, Greg, you got involved with the show when it was at West in San Francisco, right?
I did, in San Francisco. And I was one of the few people on the team that had never seen the movie. And I remember getting on a flight, they needed some help. And I like got on the show and I got on the flight with the script. And by the end of the flight, I'd read the script and I thought it was hysterical and just very touching in the characters. And I didn't know any of the music at this point. So I walked into rehearsal and just saw them singing some of the songs and it really added to already an amazing play. So I did get involved in San Francisco and we had many days where we got up at 6 a.m. and went to bed at 2 in the morning. And we got it up and it just fantastic. And now we're taking that next step at George Street, make it even better.
Absolutely. I know people are excited to see Jackie Burns perform 2 songs tonight. Can we talk about our first song we're going to see tonight?
Yes. The story is based about on the 2 pivotal moments of the summer of 69, the Walk on the Moon on July 20th and the Woodstock Festival on August 15th. And that summer lends itself to perfect story structure. And the first song, Ground Beneath My Feet, is based on the first decision Pearl makes to change. And one thing Cheryl always says is, the men walked on the moon, Pearl wouldn't have shtup the blouse moon. That it was a summer where suddenly there were endless possibilities, this complete paradigm shift where you could see the earth from the moon and this feeling of change. And the astronauts were risking their lives. And so you've got this woman feeling all this stuff inside, and the song happens after she calls the blouse man and asks if he would watch the moonwalk with him.
So here is Jackie Burns singing our first song, Ground Beneath My Feet.
Did I imagine that? Did I just make that call? I can barely breathe. No, I can't breathe at all. Look at me, I'm shaking. I must be insane. My heart is racing like a runaway subway train. Something's happening. Somebody crack that mirror. That woman isn't me. Somebody slam that door
and throw away the key. She better snap awake. She's making a big mistake, but she just can't seem to keep the ground beneath her feet. I need a cigarette. Wait, I need three or four. A voice keeps whispering no, a voice keeps shouting more. First I'm boiling hot, then I'm freezing cold. First I'm a woman, then I'm 17 years old. What is happening? Somebody break that mirror. I don't like what I see. That crazy woman there, she can't be me. Look at my listen to my heartbeat. I just can't seem to keep the ground beneath my feet. Pearly, what you doing? You're Marty's loyal wife. Who the hell you fooling? You're gonna ruin your life. No, I won't. Pearly, I'm telling you, don't want.
Jackie.
I want to see that production. Yeah.
It's one of the few songs that Paul and I worked on in the very beginning. I mean, it changed through the years, but it so expresses what Pearl is going through at that point in the story. And it is about first I'm a woman, now I'm 17 years old, and she's both.
So I'd love to hear a little more about the music from Paul and Greg for a second. I know you collaborated with the great Anne Marie Molazzo, who I know has been working with Paul for more than a hot second.
Oh, absolutely. And Anne Marie obviously is one of our team members. Also, Dylan Condor is our co-orchestrator. Okay. So for instance, you heard that song, you might have heard, you noticed that it wasn't just piano accompaniment. There's quite a few musicians playing. So right when COVID happened, we were scheduled to do an actual recording session with Jackie and the musicians, because Dylan and I had started to orchestrate the piece, and we got shut down. So a few weeks after COVID started, several of my musician friends just kind of volunteered their time and sent me, you know, tracks of themselves playing, and I put it together just so our entire team at George Street could sort of hear what the show was going to sound like. And so I think that's the first time anybody's actually got to hear what it's going to sound like, because we made a lot of changes in San Francisco. We made a big effort. You might, the Hendels, Ruth and Steve, are, let's say, experts in the music of 1969, if you will. And they have great ideas about how this, it was a film, obviously. And there's such a soundtrack to 1969 that I loved taking Paul's songs and then being inspired by like Jefferson Airplane or Paul Butterfield and the Byrds and Crosby, Stills and Nash and Young. And so I've been working with Dylan and taking all these songs and say, how do they fit into this period? What makes us think of 1969? How did we react to Woodstock? What were the guitars doing at the time? So that's what you're getting to hear now, is the kind of fruits of our labor in that effect.
And Paul, what was that collaboration like for you? It sounds like it was so thrilling.
Yeah, I'm very thrilled very easily, as you can tell.
Expectations are low.
You weren't born in America, and you came to America for the first time in 1984, and this is an inherent American story. So what was it like for you to sort of dive in and sort of dig into the story?
Oh, it was good. You know, Universal Story is a universal story, but, you know, look, I was working with legends, finally.
He also composes on guitar, too, like a lot of his composition. I think the second song we're going to show.
Yeah, let's talk about our second song.
He composed, I think, Paul, you composed that one on piano, right? Part of My Heart. I think Ground Beneath My Heart definitely composed on guitar, but didn't you do Part of My Heart on piano?
Both, actually, but I got the initial riff from the piano.
So let's hear more about Part of My Heart.
So by now, Pearl is in the third week of her affair. And again, to think about between the moonwalk and Woodstock was less than 3 weeks. She has been busted. And, you know, her mother-in-law is suspect, basically knows. And so the decision about Woodstock is even more excruciating for her. She has started writing since she met the blouse man. Like, all these parts of herself are opening up. And she knows that going to Woodstock means she's risking everything. She's making that final leap. So, this is a song she sings when the hippies jump into a lake. And she starts by singing to them, the hippies en route to Woodstock.
So here is Part of My Heart.
Am I the kind of woman who could jump right in and follow you? What kind of woman would I be if I broke all their hearts for me? It feels like this is my last chance to teach myself a different dance. I wanna write, I wanna paint, I wanna fly, I wanna sing. I could lose everything. There's a part of my heart that's calling. All the walls around my heart are falling.
We just want to talk about, to close, what are you guys most excited about when we can get back in a theater and see the show again? I can go to any of you.
Jackie Burns on stage. How about Jackie Burns? Just her. I think it's just to have community again. And Joe and Jen and New York Theater Barn, you should be really just really thank you, because like this just felt so great, and it just felt so great to be in the theater community again. I think just you know, telling stories and collaborating and telling stories that are important to people and also that will entertain. So I just have to say that I can't wait to be back in a rehearsal room and in a theater again.
Yeah, I mean, like so many people, we were on the edge of our first rehearsal. Mm-hmm. Like we shut down the day before I was flying to New York. So if you imagine all that excitement and adrenaline, and then, so I just can't wait to go back in the world and be with everyone and be in a theater with humans.
And be in George Street's nice new, they have a beautiful new theater. Everybody who's watching, I encourage you to support George Street Playhouse when you come home.
Absolutely.
Their new theater, we were developing projections already, and the set is built and stored. So come see us at the fabulous George Street Theater when we come back.
Let's keep the lights on for everything.
People don't realize, you know, to store your set or to load your set out of a theater and store it so that it can be saved. In some cases, it's even more expensive than getting rid of it. So this is an incredible expense.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love you guys. We can't wait to see you soon, and we can't wait for your show.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Our second new musical is We Live in Cairo, which has book, music, and lyrics by Daniel and Patrick Lazur.
Inspired by the young Egyptians who took to the streets in 2011 to overthrow President Hosni Mubarak, We Live in Cairo follows six revolutionary students armed with laptops and cameras, guitars and spray cans, as they come of age in contemporary Cairo. We Live in Cairo moves from the jubilation of Tahrir Square through the tumultuous years that followed. As escalating division and violence lead to a military crackdown, the revolutionaries of Tahrir must confront the question of how, or even whether, to keep their dreams of change alive. A concept album of the show, Flap My Wings, is available now wherever music can be streamed and purchased.
And now, here's our conversation with the writers of We Live in Cairo, Daniel and Patrick Lazur.
Hi!
Hi, guys!
What's up?
So you are only, we've said this to you, you're only our second group of songwriters that are in the same place together, and you're our first brothers after having a mother and a son. And a father and a son.
Wow. Keeping it in the family.
Keeping it in the family.
All right. Well, let's dive into talking about your show. The Egyptian Revolution was a statement against increasing police brutality, which consisted of demonstrations, marches, occupations of plazas, acts of civil disobedience, and strikes. Millions of protesters from a range of socioeconomic and religious backgrounds demanded the overthrow of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, resulting in at least 846 people killed and over 6,000 injured. After reading your show on the NAMPT Festival Committee years ago, I was inspired, after I was hired to direct a production of Aida in Singapore, the musical, to set the show in Tahrir Square in the 2011 Egyptian Revolution with protesters telling the story of Aida as a protest. So this story, is a really vibrant part of history because of the power of the people of Egypt. Mm-hmm. Your musical, We Live in Cairo, dramatizes Egypt's Arab Spring uprising from its prehistory in the organizing of the early 2000s through the 18 days of protest in 2011 that led to Mubarak's resignation, and the year that followed, ending with dictator Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's raid of two camps of protesters in Cairo. So many Americans have no idea about Arab Spring, the 2011 Egyptian Revolution, January 25th, Day of Revolt. I mean, I bet most people don't even know that the 25th of January was chosen because this was an Egyptian police holiday. And there are even echoes of the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests in this very story. And even the battles and protests we're currently facing here in our country during this historical and trying time. You, as Jen said, are brothers and Bostonians or Worcestrians of Lebanese background with a vibrant musical theater storytelling voice. What drew you to this story and what inspired you to create an inspired ensemble musical?
It's a great question. I feel like I tell this story a lot, but we were inspired by a photo actually that was taken by a photojournalist, Ed O, of the New York Times. It's this great photo of all of these youth revolutionaries on the seventh floor of a building overlooking Tahrir Square. And they're all like sort of on a laptop. They have like, they're all like, there's, it's like kind of this messy pell-mell situation where there's a laptop, there's like hard drives, there's like Coke cans and all this. And all of these students are around uploading videos and photos and other revolutionary media from that day in the square onto their computers so they can share it and hopefully get more people to the square the next day. So that photo really, I think, was the impetus for the entire show. And then from there, we really started, we started getting into the music, started making contacts with activists that were in the square, as well as musicians that were in the square. And that was kind of the beginning of the journey, the now probably 6.5-7 year journey, the whole thing.
Yeah. And I know your development path is really exciting. Paul talked about NAMT. Where else has your show been around? Because it's been around at a lot of really exciting places.
Yeah, it's bounced around and it's changed a lot. They've been different shows in sort of every iteration. Just given that, you know, learning about the revolution, learning more about the region was something really important to us. So with every new conversation that we had, we sort of had to respond with a new draft. Yeah. And, you know, even resulting in us going to Egypt and doing a reading with students at the university in Cairo, American University of Cairo. So that's one place it's gone in a reading format. It's been at
O'Neill.
The O'Neill Theater Center, NAMT, the NAMT Festival. And then most recently, it was at the American Repertory Theater.
It was directed by Egyptian-American director Tabi Magar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was going to say, what did you discover from that production? That was the first time the show was really on its feet in a way it hadn't been before.
Yeah, that's like, what did we learn? Like, what did we learn from the show?
And yeah, what did you come out of that first kind of run with full costumes and set and whatnot?
Yeah, that's a great. I think I learned that we had this amazing talkback series that the ART organized with the Middle East Institute at Harvard. And I think, you know, when we were sitting and listening to the talkback with certain scholars and activists who had come to see the show or journalists or whatever, and there was this conversation, I think like the show seemed to really land, and it didn't land for everyone, but it landed definitely for those people who have an interest in learning more about the region and learning about, sounds like educational. Like, I mean, hopefully, you know, we're trying to do something that's entertaining and impactful and not just like a docu-theater. But I think you do have to come into the theater and be like, this is going to be something that is new, you know?
I know about.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, given these sort of talks and the conversations we had throughout our entire process with the ART, I think I kind of finally realized that this show
it needs to be sort of a living, breathing thing. Mm-hmm. Like it needs to be constantly changing. It needs to be put in every different iteration. Like it needs to be in concert set, in a concert setting. It needs to be, you know, recorded with, you know, different art, you know, with all kinds of different artists and different outlooks and all these things. And I think like what I realized during the production and after the production is like, you know, getting what this show is trying to say and getting the, you know, the Egyptian revolution and the revolutions of the Arab world to people in the United States is so important. And in whatever way we can do that is the most important to us, I think.
Absolutely. Right. And I just was going to say, I think theater is also such an education tool. So you're doing the right thing if you're looking at it in that lens as well.
Yeah. We hope. Yeah. Thank you.
I think that what sort of separates your show from a docu-musical is that I think your characters are really, you know, they're at conflict with this country in the beginning. And then I think sort of by the second half of your show, they're more at conflict with themselves, you know, based on
totally
what they learn throughout the journey about how they truly feel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're spot on. And I think what's sort of hard, I mean, what was the biggest challenge of this musical was to have a first act that really was propelling towards like the one of the greatest revolutions in modern history, you know, the January 25th to February 11th. And then trying to find a way to really activate that second act, which is really quite personal, quite intimate, just between these six characters, and how all of their, you know, all of their politics and their relationships start to fracture.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think the audience experience sort of mimics the revolution in a way, because it's sort of like you feel it, you're swept up in what's happening, and then do you hang on for what comes after, or
because that happens? I mean,
you know, and I we all experience that when we're swept up in something, especially political movements, like when there aren't millions in the street, what's going on?
Right.
There's this character Fedwa who I think is my favorite character personally in the show. And she is really like the die-hard revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second act of the show, she to a lot of the characters, she appears to be unhinged. You know, she appears to like, well, why aren't, like, you need to go out in the streets, you need to, but in reality, like, this is the only way that movements continue, you know, with that one person who actually continues to fight and bring people along with them to the next movement and the next movement, you know?
And I think that's what's happening right now too. And like, if I tuned in right now to this broadcast, I would think you were talking about what was happening in New York right now with Black Lives Matter. I think that's what's so exciting about movements. We can all learn something from each other.
There are certain big, you know, ideas, questions.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I like what you said about the audience, their experience mimics the revolution. And I sort of imagine by the end, it's sort of like, are you going to join us up here? Or are you going to sit there and just continue? Right.
Sit there and wait for change, because you can't wait. Change is only going to happen if you try.
Right.
Totally.
Right,
yeah. Right. You know, we're trying to fit in the song about the martyrs. Yeah, the people who died for this revolution, and how, you know, it really is about, you know, how essential it is to continue honoring those martyrs even past the revolution. And I think that's
and,
sort of,
and we don't use the term martyrs necessarily here, but I almost think that it's maybe to an American ear, it sort of has this distancing effect, but that's very much what we're experiencing now. I mean, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, like it's,
absolutely,
you know, martyrs of revolution, these names that we have to remember and uphold and fight for.
So let's talk about our first song tonight. I think both performers are the both of you as well.
Tahrir is now, right?
Tahrir
it's the
now.
End of act one. It's the characters right before the 18th day of the revolution when Mubarak steps down. So here it is.
Here it is.
I'm a son of Tahrir, born into hope, into heat, into thousands of voices. I'm a son of Tahrir, out in the crowd, on the street, our pain, our pride, our choices. We've been
chanting Horea, Horea. We'll be singing for days. Whoa, and our country screamed, and my country is screaming. Tahrir is now, and now is here. We'll wait an hour, a day, a month, a year. We have cracked the wall of fear, and we'll see it crumble.
الشعب يريد إسقاط النظام. الشعب يريد إسقاط النظام. مش هنمشي هو يمشي. أنا شدنا بترن بالليل والنهار من القلب لحد الفجر الجديد. شعرتنا بالدم كل مصري وأمي شهيد. هنجيب لك حقك يمه يم الدنيا. حرية 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 حرية.
Yes.
Yay. I wish I liked my brother enough to write a musical with him.
Yeah. Oh, that's all.
He told me she was going to be the bad joke. That was actually a pretty good joke. That's funny.
Yeah. But who said we liked each other is the real thing.
Yeah. Ooh, that's true.
By the way, so that's the music really makes me move. So I'm curious to see how the movement vocabulary of the show sort of materializes.
Yeah. We had a great choreographer, Samar Haddad King, who really responded to the music in a beautiful way, and a great ensemble who moved amazingly and very naturally, and even though some of them weren't like trained dancers, like their ability to sort of step into sort of
organic,
their culture really was beautiful.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned an album. Can you tell us a little more about that? Because I think, you know, this is a show where it's in development, but people are still already so excited about it.
You know, I was talking with our great orchestrator and music supervisor, Michael Starobin, and he just gave such a great piece of advice. Let the album be a separate sound object. Like, if people are interested in the score, then they'll dig into to figure out what the story is. But let it stand on its own. And I think we're really taking that to its hilt and making sure the songs are, you know, arranged differently and brought to a,
context, like a sort of song, sort of more singer-songwriter context, pop, maybe a little bit more pop.
So let's hear about our second song tonight.
Yes. Okay. Oh, sure. So this is "Flap My Wings." This comes after a sort of grisly scene in the show where the ensemble happens upon online a photo of a student, Khaled Saeed, who was beaten to death by police. And the image that was released from his autopsy, in many ways, was sort of the spark to the protests, because they saw this young student, this young
26-year-old,
you know, 26-year-old programmer who was simply just sitting in a cafe in Alexandria, pulled out by police and beaten to death. And the song is sort of about this term that has sort of been circulating now in our media too, the deep state in Egypt, where it feels like you can't do anything. You have no power underneath everything above you. But maybe you do is sort of the thesis.
So here is "Flap My Wings."
They feed me lies, if not then scraps of truth. They fill me up with shit. I feel shame. They fill themselves. They fill me up again. This time on state TV. They said he ate hashish. That makes no sense. They say it anyways. They say it anyways. There are many ways to tell the truth. Just tell them that the youth are doing drugs. That's why he died. And drugs are wrong. That is not done. That is haram. They feed themselves. They like confections most. They let their bellies out when they're full. They feed themselves. They drive in chauffeured cars. They shut down rotaries. And if you know the man in charge, you pass by, you pass by, you pass by, you pass by. You have rights, you pass by. You're my friend, you pass by. I can see them. I can see deep within. I can hear.
Amen.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
It was so awesome. Thanks for sharing those two songs. Last question tonight. What are you the most excited about when we're back in the theater and you can work on the show?
For me, honestly, it is truly being like the joy of feeling every time you walk into a theater to see a show that you have like a community, especially in the New York theater, that you have like a community around you and you sort of see someone from across the way that you kind of know and you maybe like talk to them a little bit and then over there is like a friend and you say hi, like all of that stuff I miss so much. And then you like all sit there and experience a piece together. It's just, I'm like tearing up thinking.
Yeah, no, I said to someone last week, I didn't realize how much time I spent in a dark room until I wasn't able to anymore. And
it's the best
though.
It's such a social event.
And your whole week is like around that night, you know?
Yeah. So
this on that night.
You know? I will never complain about the length, like you're getting home late.
Oh my God, literally, you know? I could go to Les Mis every night for 3 hours and I will be, send me to all the 3 hour shows. It's fine.
I love coming together with storytellers like you and the team that we had before this from A Walk on the Moon to just be reminded about different messages about the world. Like I love how Pam said about how that story was born out of being on the wrong side of history, literally that metaphor. And also how you said the audience their experience mimics the revolution, just the power of that, just to sort of feel those themes and those metaphors from storytellers is something that I miss doing in a room. So I'm personally looking forward to that. So thank you both so much. And we can't wait to see what's next for We Live in Cairo.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. It's really great. And I so appreciate us, you
thank
know, you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Join us next time for more of The Musicals of Tomorrow.
If you enjoyed The Musicals of Tomorrow, please rate, subscribe, and share. Our theme song, The Music of Tomorrow, was written by Lynn Shankle and Sarah Cooper for their all-female-identifying musical, Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.